This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 83.
One of the opportunities I have at Mercer is to do a lot of our research into employee sentiment and how it's changed. And I saw a huge shift in attitudes coming out straight after the pandemic. And they were along the lines of they're less inclined to think about those hierarchical ladders that we used to have in our traditional workforce and talent models. And I will define my worth by my role and my level and the perks that come with that. And more, it's like, value me for what I bring today to this equation. A couple of other things we saw, I think that sort of work hard, play hard, get it done culture of the past has gone. People want to be respected for their time, their energy. Don't bother me with busy work if there's a better way to do it. I think AI's got a play here. But also, they don't want to be good citizens in the way that we might have conceived it in the past. They want to shape things up. They want the company to reflect their values. They want to have that influence on the organizational field. And as we started to lay those out, it really shocked me that that's a fundamental shift in how people want to be treated in the workplace, how they want to be inspired. And I think it really changes or challenges our legacy models.
How have employee attitudes about work shifted since the pandemic? Why is it even more important than ever that we build human-centric organizations? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. In today's episode, we'll be talking about how employee attitudes and perspectives on work are changing, and why organizations that lean into the people age will win in the long run. And even in a choppy labor market, the importance of finding the right talent with the right skills is still on executives' minds. Research by the Institute for Corporate Productivity, also known as I4CP, in their Talent Imperative Report, found that almost three-quarters of the leaders surveyed cited that skill shortages was one of the top three potential disruptors to their business in the coming year. With a shortage of skills for certain roles, organizations need to be investing in the upskilling of their current employees and focus on retaining their talent by creating a work experience and culture that truly meets their changing attitudes and needs. Luckily, my guests this week, Kate Bravery and Ilya Bonick, who co-authored and wrote the new book, Work Different, 10 Truths to Winning the People Age, have a lot to say and share on this topic. Ilya is the president for Mercer's career business and their head of strategy. Among his many responsibilities, Ilya is focused on helping Mercer's business evolution as they adopt various generative AI tools to augment their own workforce and continue to make an ever-increasing positive impact to their clients. Joining Ilya is Kate Bravery. Kate is an organizational psychologist who's leading Mercer's insight and advisory agenda, where she's responsible for authoring Mercer's Global Talent Trends Report. Both Kate and Ilya have a great understanding of where the future of work is going. In our conversation, we discuss how to build a winning organization in what they call the people age, why you should think of employees as contributors instead of workers, how AI will amplify our intelligence and increase our productivity, why HR needs to lead the way in building an AI-first culture and driving its adoption, and examples of three companies that are implementing different, innovative, skill-first initiatives, and much more. Kate, Ilya, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both?
Well, JP, thanks for having us here.
Yeah, really excited to have this one. Thanks, JP.
Well, thank you both for being on. We're excited to talk about your book, Work Different, 10 Truths for Winning in a People Age. I know you put a lot of work, a lot of research into this, and you're also practitioners, so you're seeing this day-to-day with your clients. That's what I think makes the book a little bit different. But I wanted to start off and just ask you both, what really led you, both of you, and your third co-author, because there's someone who's not here that did a lot of work on that book, unfortunately, they couldn't make the podcast. What has you guys brought together and said, let's work on this book, Work Different, 10 Truths to Winning the People Age? Why? What brought you together to actually write this book?
So JP, it's kind of like how you introduced is we've seen clients with so many challenges over the last few years, how much the world of work has changed, work's gone digital, we've gone remote. Now we're dealing with the influx of generative AI and the implications. From the employee perspective, attitudes and priorities have changed so much. Flexibility around work-life balance, expectations on pay, purpose, health, all of that. And so for us, it sparked a view of if there's been so much change, maybe the old ways of workforce management, of talent strategy, maybe they're not as effective as they were before. And if we could provide our clients and our readers, our audience, with a deeper perspective on what these changes were, then maybe there's the opportunity to look at talent strategy, or even from an employee perspective and proactivity around career management, to end up in a better place, to end up in a sustainable place around work, careers. So that took us to writing this book. And the other thing that we wanted to do was also make it relevant to multiple audiences. It wasn't just to the HR buyer, our client, but to managers, to any leaders, and to any individuals in the workforce.
Yeah, I agree. For me, the book is bookended by the pandemic and the onset of ChatGPT, which of course happened midway through writing the book, which is always interesting. But the pandemic did force us all to rethink our relationship with work and dream big about what work could be. And we had lots of great conversations about that big reset. And then I think some of it just didn't deliver. And we ended up in 2020 in the US with 50 million people quitting. We had burnout, the highest levels we've ever seen around the world. And then we had big engagement challenges, aka quiet quitting happening. So I agree with Ilya. Things weren't working. And then we had generative AI, which was showing us the possibilities of what work could be. And that got us excited. I think if you bring the two together, we finally have that opportunity to actually pause and take some of those gains so that we can do it a bit different. To Ilya's point, we also wanted to maybe come off mute on some of the stuff we really thought that maybe we wouldn't say on a professional podcast or to our clients. But some of the issues that we thought were pretty thorny and really needed a bigger rethink than tinkering around the sides.
That's great. So much has really changed about how we work. I think we're kind of going back a little bit. It's kind of hard. I think what your book is trying to do is hopefully, like you said, take these gains, reset, and then continue to move forward, right? And I think hopefully it's probably incremental, but there's a lot that we can really learn from the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. As I read the book, I was really interested when you said we're in the people age. Tell me more about how you're defining the people age and why it's different than the past.
It's really interesting because I get that question a lot. I think a lot of people say, aren't we in the digital age? And I think to some of Ilya's points earlier, business has never been more competitive. The world's never been less predictable. Top talent has never been harder to find, to keep, to engage. And by and large, a lot of people have actually got more choices about work than they've ever had before. And then we add to that the opportunity of large language models that's forced us all to say, what do humans bring to the equation? What's our unique contribution to work? And to me, that ushers in an unprecedented opportunity for people to work at their best and to make sure that our people models are in service of our people. So we talk about the people age being a brave new world around human-centric values because we've got to engage and inspire that talent. We also talk about in ensuring that the opportunities of this age are in service to all people. So ushering in a more equitable and engaging future of work where everybody thrives. So that means, you know, sharing the digital dividend that comes out of generative AI, making sure that some of the choices we're making are focused on the long-term health, well-being, and employability of the workforce. And I think it's quite different. And I think generative AI makes us focus on that even more than maybe when we started out that book. Wouldn't you agree, Ilya?
I would. And I myself, Kate, I often just go back to the commercial business perspective and economics. And I think fundamentally what we saw coming out of COVID is the businesses couldn't succeed without their people. We had unemployment go up to record level, but we also had it drop down to the lowest levels ever. Organizations were surprised by the level of demand that they had from the consumer, and what held them back from realizing their maximal performance was they just couldn't get the talent that they needed. There's a shortage of talent. It's going to go forward. So that's one perspective on it. And the other, if you want to introduce AI and say, well, the world is more digital and it should be a digital age, AI doesn't work by itself, right? We need people in the driver's seat to take advantage of it. So whichever way we look at it, I don't think there's ever been a time where people have been more important to business success.
JP, I agree with your point about have we gone backwards, because I think there are lessons we need to keep front of mind. All the narrative at the moment is about the productivity gains that AI can give. But if we're only talking about that without what is it doing with regard to improving health and well-being or upskilling the people to take advantage of that, I think we will end up with a zero-sum game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think anyone's got that figured out yet, but you're right. We always talk about productivity. We haven't talked about how that'll spark innovation, maybe even more focus on higher value work. It's really hard to predict where that's going to go with ChatGPT and just AI in general. But I personally think what AI can't do is it can't lead a team, can't motivate a team of high performers, can't coach and develop somebody, can't make decisions and judgment calls with people in real time. And so I think the people age is the right framework that you guys have laid out here. I love it. Kate, one thing you said really surprised you most when writing the book was this idea of shifting your thought patterns to think of workers as contributors and not employees. What is it about this concept that surprised you the most? Because I thought that was a fascinating concept to shift that mindset to contributors.
I think we also did quite a lot of introspection during those pandemic lockdown years. And probably one of the big lessons for me personally was that my employees don't want to work for me. They want me to work with them. And I think that's a fundamental difference. We talk a lot about, well, we flattened organizational hierarchies. We want people to be more self-driven leaders. But I think it really changes how they're thinking about their relationship with their boss and their relationship with their company. One of the opportunities I have at Mercer is to do a lot of our research into employee sentiment and how it's changed. I'm doing our global talent trend study for about 6 or 7 years, and I saw a huge shift in attitudes coming out straight after the pandemic. And there were along the lines of work-life balance is no longer the dominant mindset. Our shift to kind of work around how the company works, but instead it was more lifestyle integration. If you want me to bring my best self to work, then respect me as a whole person and make work for me. We saw the long-term career model that you and I grew up with. You know, we work, then we learn, and then we apply our work, just blown out the water. I think the traditional model is I expect to be trained to do the job I'm doing. But now we're seeing that people want to be valued. They want to know what's next, and they want to be learning skills in the flow of work. They're less inclined to think about those hierarchical ladders that we used to have in our traditional workforce and talent models. And I will define my worth by my role and my level and the perks that come with that. And more, it's like, value me for what I bring today to this equation. A couple of other things we saw, I think that sort of work hard, play hard, get it done culture of the past has gone. People want to be respected for their time, their energy. Don't bother me with busy work if there's a better way to do it. I think AI's got to play here. But also, they don't want to be good citizens in the way that we might have conceived it in the past. They want to shape things up. They want the company to reflect their values. They want to have that influence on the organizational feel. And as we started to lay those out, it really shocked me that that's a fundamental shift in how people want to be treated in the workplace, how they want to be inspired. And I think it really changes or challenges our legacy models of talent management and how we manage people. You just mentioned that AI can't manage the team. Funnily enough, when we were getting towards the end of the book, we thought, wouldn't it be interesting to feed the whole book through a large language model? And say, if you read this book, what would you do differently? And it was early days of ChatGPT. But we asked some questions, and then it started spontaneously asking its own questions. And one of its own questions was, what would I do differently with my team on Monday? And it gave such an eloquent response. I had to share it back with Ilya and said, I don't know, maybe I want to work for the AI, because it was pretty good. So it is interesting. But knowing what you should do to lead in the new world and then actually working different, I think means we've got to let go of old habits. And that's where I think we as humans can get stuck.
I wanted to double click a little bit, Kate, because I think what you were talking about, just the shifting you saw in the research, I just want to make sure, is that beyond just Generation Z, right? Beyond, you know, millennials. Did you see it across generations, a shift in the way we're thinking about work?
When I started out in my career, we were all obsessed with gender differences, generational differences, geo differences. First, we started doing our global talent trends research. There was significant differences across them. And yet in the last few years coming out of the pandemic, attitudes towards work have converged in ways that I've never seen before. So for the 2022 and the 2024 study that's out at the end of February, the top three reasons that make people thrive at work are, I want to work for a purpose that I'm proud of, so a brand that I respect. I want to feel a sense of belonging, which has actually shot up a lot over the last couple of years. And I want to feel valued for my contribution. That's not just contribution to profit. That's all the different ways I contribute, which to me is that goodbye employees, hello contributors. They want to contribute in different ways and they want to contribute to different things. And that is stable across gender, generation, and geography. And Global Talent Trends is huge and it looks across 17 markets. And I've never seen that before. So I do think we see a convergence, but obviously I think particularly when you look at cross-cultural differences, the way that is felt can feel a little different around the world.
That's so great. And for you to kind of go a little bit deeper and help us understand that. Because I think we've seen that shift. I think we're feeling that shift. And I think why I wanted to highlight that point is that it's not always going back to the stereotypes about the generational differences, which are more stereotypes, frankly, versus actual age differences. But that's a different podcast.
Yes. Yeah, well, interesting. I mean, young people want to feel connected, belonging, and actually they're quite ambitious. Thank God. They just don't want to sign up to maybe what they've seen some of their parents go through. And so they want that deal to look a little different for them, a little bit more respectful.
Maybe like the return to office and the challenges organizations have around these highlight that it is issues across the entire workforce. I mean, many of our clients struggle actually to get their more senior and experienced people back to the office because they're adjusted to a much more flexible lifestyle. They're experienced. They know their career. They know how to do their job. They've got their networks. Hey, I can be more productive. Why do I need to go back to the office, right? Versus those that are in early career, arguably, that will benefit most from face-to-face interaction, the kind of learning that comes on the job that's a little more difficult to do remotely. I think there's just one illustration of how it's not just Gen Z, actually. It's attitude change across the entire workforce.
Ily, remind me of that. I don't know if you saw that meme that was going around in the middle of the pandemic, picture of executives in an empty office, everyone was gone. And then a picture of employees on the beach working from home and the executive saying, we've got something wrong here. And I think that was many of our advisors, but I agree with you. I think the return to office has probably changed the most in the last 18 months than we've ever seen.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, Kate, Ilya, and I will be back to discuss how AI will impact work, why HR needs to be driving the adoption of AI, and how three companies are implementing skills-first initiatives. Stay tuned and we'll be right back. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well. And as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. Yeah, and Ilya, you also, as you talked about, what surprised you from the research was that people were overwhelmingly not afraid to walk away from a job if the compensation wasn't there. Yeah. I think it's shifted in the past, and it just talk more about why this surprised you and what that finding was all about.
Beneath the kind of surface of organizations with high employee engagement scores, there's a lot more from employees. And what we've seen over recent times is when the opportunity presents itself to pursue something new, to gain an advantage, they jump. Pay used to be ranked number 3 or 4 as the reason for why people leave. And now, according to our research, it's jumped to number 1. What we've seen is also that if it's only about pay, that employees are looking for more. So there needs to be more than just pay to the equation. So what's the career development? What's my purpose here? Do I have a sustainable future? And if I don't, I'll make the move as soon as I can. Yeah. I think in recent times, we're also seeing pay become more transparent. And as pay becomes more transparent, employees get to see what others are paid, both within the organization, or estimate what others are paid within the organization or outside. And it prompts a need or an opportunity to look for more. Kate, I don't know if you want to go here, but we've got an anecdote. We were at an airport together partway writing through this book.
Yes, we're at an airport, late as you so often do, you know, cancel, cancel, cancel. So, you know, we do what every consultant does, get out your laptop, think, oh God, well, I better be productive. So I'll use my time effectively. And we're quiet. And then just like at a cocktail party, you start to overhear a conversation, and maybe one you shouldn't be here. It's basically somebody who's in HR, probably the head of HR, on the call to one of their team members. And we're hearing one side of the conversation where they're saying, I'm not surprised that young people are leaving. Yeah, I hear you. You know, they stay 1 or 2 years and they're gone. And we get them in because we've got a good brand. We offer really good compensation when they join. And we offer great training for those first 2 years. And yes, I know they've jumped to, they name their main competitor and says, I don't blame them. They get a sign-on bonus. They get better perks. They get opportunities to do stuff that we can't move them around. We've got policies that say you have to be a year before you can move. And so, yeah, we just sort of have to suck it up that we're losing our best talent to that. And then I think the chestnut was, she ended up saying, but I'm not worried about the ones that go. They're the smart ones. I'm worried about the ones that stay, because it's the ones that stay that either don't feel that they can get a job elsewhere or they're not ambitious enough to move. For us, that really got us talking afterwards about, gosh, when do we stop rewarding loyalty? What have we got wrong with the value proposition? And is it really best for the long-term outcomes for individuals to be jumping so quickly? And that led us to sort of dig into some of the data about, does it pay to stay or not? And as you know, we're one of the largest compensation firms in the world. And the stats were pretty damning. Actually, it did pay to switch. But of course, the loss for the individual's development and loss for the organization is much broader than that. And so in the book, we really look at that balance sheet with a broader lens and talk about that maybe we need to interrupt the trend.
Yeah, I think it's so important because, yeah, in the short term, you may get a pay increase. But one thing I've said, and I think if I look back at my career, I could have done this better, frankly, and that's why this podcast is here to hopefully impart some of these lessons, is that the most overlooked career opportunity people have is their current role. There's so much in your current job, your current role that you can do. And that if you're with a great company that has the opportunity where you can take two or three different options and you've got a good manager and good support, I would encourage you early in your career to stay there, grind it out, get breadth and depth across the lateral moves before you make that big jump. Because there's something to be said for learning the organization, learning that industry, and not taking that next move. Now, that's going to fit for everybody, but I think you need to see more of that. But I guess what I heard, Ilya, was compensation was a hygiene factor in terms of like, well, pay me enough and all these other things matter more. It almost sounds like now people are saying, hey, I want my cake and I want to eat it too.
Yeah.
I want my career growth. I want purpose. I want a great manager. And boy, I want to get paid at 90th percentile.
Totally. And I think two things have prompted it. One is we've been through a cycle where there just wasn't enough talent for the work. So it was really easy to switch jobs. And also digital working made it easier, right? Unlocked a geography. So geography no longer became a barrier to the kind of jobs and the kind of organization I could work with. Unlocked movement between industries that you wouldn't necessarily have seen or expected before. When we did go through that phase of so many people out of work, and then in the phase where there was not enough talent to do the work, employers got very creative and took some risks in terms of the talent that they would take on board, hiring talent with backgrounds and experience that maybe they wouldn't have looked at before. And surprise, surprise, that talent was just as effective as maybe where they used to look. So there's a bunch of issues like that. One of the things I think is interesting now, and we've reflected on the book, is, you know, how long it takes to write a book. By the time we wrote it and published it, and there's a 6-month lag between the final point going on the book and it being published, the world changed. And we wrote this mostly in 2022, where there was this extreme difference between supply of talent and demand for it. And now, depending on which part of the world you're in, it feels a little different. And so we've asked ourselves, and this is really important, that the lessons and the topics that we share in the book are just as relevant today as they were then? If organizations, and this is for a lot of our clients, we've seen levels of turnover that go down. It doesn't mean it's a time to get comfortable because the cycle will swing again. I'll share a story. Kate and I were in India together, a month ago, just before Christmas, right? Kate caught up with one of our clients who runs in India, they're now called Global Capability Centers. So it's the offshore, the back office of many of our client organizations. And these organizations might have 10, 20, 30,000 employees. They're quite large. Well, a lot of the demand for these service centers is driven by the US technology economy. And if it slowed down, then so is demand for the growth of these capability centers. But prediction is by 2030, there'll be 1,000 new capability centers, 150 a year. And a client had been through a phase where they were complaining that they weren't losing enough talent. It sounds crazy. They had built their organization model around expecting 25 to 35% voluntary employee turnover per year. Now those numbers are dropped to the low teens, which you'd think that should be more comfortable. But the whole cost model was built on the fact that I would lose senior talent, I would bring in junior talent, and I would train them up. And the client was grappling with not only their costs going up, but fearing that as soon as the economy picked up again, their levels of turnover were going to jump to those previous levels, maybe even go higher because there was a pent-up demand for talent to leave and they'd be back in the same situation. So now was not the time to get comfortable and think, okay, what we've been through over the last few years is something that's been gone and forgotten. It's still there waiting to break loose, if you like, and bring all those challenges back for the employer.
Yeah, it's a great example. Kate, do you want to say something?
It reminds me of what you were just saying there about we've got to get those lateral moves happening within the company, sort of ending up doesn't pay to stay in your current role. Because if you haven't got movement and you've got the stagnancy, that Gilly is talking about, the downstream negative connotations for that, both for teams, for leaders. We share some research in there about the positive impact of having tenured people in your team. But I do think getting those lateral moves right and getting pay right so that your internal talent stays in step with market demand is really challenging. And I think challenges the traditional models where pay always goes up in one way. And more clients now are introducing a pay for skills component just to get some of that agility. Many of them are also looking at pivoting away from full-time employees to hybrid or contingent workers, just so they bring a bit more flex into their models just because the market conditions keep changing on us.
Yeah, I think it's a great point in thinking about we always plan for what's happening now. Like we're sort of basing our baseline and our thought of the future of kind of what's happened here or in the past. And I think COVID and other things are shifting. It's hard to predict what turnover rates are going to be or the impact of technology like AI. And Ilya, I know you've been studying this even past the book. Just what do you think the impact of AI will be on the workplace for each of us? And what's Mercer or your individual author's point of view on this?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at this. The first place I'll go is actually our sister company, Oliver Wyman, together with Mercer. We just released a paper on the implications of AI in workforce, just in time for the Economic Forum. And one of the concepts we talked about was juniorization. The idea being that AI has the potential to increase the level of performance of someone who is a novice to very rapidly approach the capability of someone who's an expert not using the AI. If that's the case, there's a few that the entry-level employee will soon be doing the work of the line manager. First-level line manager will soon be doing the work of the middle level. And last year, I think it's like August, September, Harvard Business Review released a paper where they'd done some research with Boston Consulting Group. I'm not sure if you've come across it, but they took a bunch of consultants. They gave one group access to ChatGPT and the other not, gave them a bunch of tasks to work through. And what they found was something like an increase in productivity of 40% from the ChatGPT group to the non-control group. That doesn't sound like much. But when you actually looked at an illustration of the distribution of performance between those that had access to AI and those that did not have access to AI, what you found is that the distribution of the AI users moved to approach the outlier level of performance, the outlier positive level of performance of those consultants who were not using the tool. So think about that impact. You go from being average to being extraordinary just by using this tool in the right way. So that's one way I think AI can impact. The other is when we think of work at Mercer, we often describe in three categories. So for every job, there's three elements of work. There's an expertise component, there's a relational component, so the interpersonal piece, and then there's a transactional component. So we think as we move forward that the transactional work will be replaced by AI. The expertise work will be augmented by AI, just in that example, as I've illustrated. And then Kate gave a perfect example of relational. I will become a better leader if I use AI, because I will go into my most difficult people conversations, consult AI, I will role play with AI. I will gain the best of knowledge of the content that's part of your podcast and the guests that you have, and I'll be much more effective. In combination, we expect that will free up something like 10 to 30% productivity, not only making people more effective, but that productivity gain is there. And then the question becomes, well, what do we do with that productivity gain? And as we survey employees, we find that most are viewing AI as positive. They appreciate that there'll be a productivity gain. And the question that they're asking is, well, do I get to benefit from any of that productivity gain? And that's something that I think employers are grappling with right now.
Ilya, I'm not sure if it's the same article that I read, the Harvard Business School one, where they talk about cyborgs and Centurion. But one of the things I found really interesting about their experiment was, yes, it lowered the people who maybe weren't so good at sort of tasks that are very similar to what we do in HR today. They were tasks such as having a look at which part of the business is doing well and what recommendations, or analyzing a number of executive interviews. But what was interesting was that some of the tasks they actually did worse on, but the consultants didn't know which tasks. They couldn't make that decision. That just shows how early we are in understanding what types of skills this will amplify and which ones will atrophy if we don't watch out on that. But what I found was interesting is the consultants that were on the control study were benchmarked lower, got risen up. But there was some comments that the outputs all look very similar. And to me, that just doubles down on the human edge, because your edge is going to come from the diversity of your humans in the room. And therefore, again, to me, it just underscores maybe using AI to make sure that we've got the right diversity, the right mix of brains in there. And I agree with Ilya. I think the opportunities go beyond productivity enhancements. The ones that get me really excited are the ones that are around personalization, because that's where you can, particularly in total rewards, get that deal really firing on all cylinders. And also prediction, where we can start to tell people, if you learn these skills, it will enable you to do multiple jobs and deliver this wealth, or nudging you. And I think some of that, we've talked about it for many years, but it hasn't been anywhere near our grasp.
I know the audience of your podcast are going to be our future leaders of HR. And just a reflection here is, like, if during the pandemic, HR was the hero in terms of keeping the organization together, I think there's an opportunity and even a need, especially now, HR to be very proactive about the HR agenda. It's so easy and arguably so natural to cede it to the technology organization, but organizations won't be successful unless there's a culture of AI. And by culture of AI, think of two dimensions. One is ensuring that employees have access to the right, arguably the best AI tools that can be provided. So one axis, if you like, the Y axis on the X is ensuring that there's high adoption, because there's no point having access to the tools if there's not this high adoption. And the combination of the two will lead the organization to be competitive and be sustainable in the future. Without it, it's going to fall behind. And I think that horizontal dimension of driving adoption is not something to be left to the technology organization. Rather, it's for our HR colleagues to be thinking about how to maximize that adoption by the workforce, for both the advantage of the organization, but also for the careers of our colleagues in organizations as well.
That's a brilliant point. I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's so critical for us to think about this as any other technology adoption, right? How do you go to a digital transformation? How does this impact the culture? What kind of reward systems, performance systems? Is AI distributed equitably across the organization? Who's using it and how are we using it? I think HR does need to be at the forefront of this. And again, another podcast. I do want to talk more, Kate, about skills. You've said that skills are the real currency of work. Tell us more why you believe this is true and what you're seeing in skills and companies using skills in the marketplace, because it's a hot topic and I think one that you've got a really good vantage point on.
It is. And just like AI, it's another one that we could talk a whole podcast on. And we feel just as passionate. And I think the two are necessary together. If we want our humans to evolve, to amplify their intelligence with AI and move into those higher value positions, you can't do that if you aren't looking at the skills agenda. But we do see the skills agenda isn't just the upskilling and reskilling. It is actually moving away from more traditional organization structures to those that are more agile and fueled by skills. And I think we have to do that because we've got sort of two imperatives. And we've been talking a lot in this podcast around talent scarcity, that the talent we need is not out there. This year in Global Talent Trends, more HR are focused on building from within out of necessity than we've ever seen before. We ask the question every year, what was most effective last year in closing the skills gap? Every single year, it's been hiring, 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 with the headache to my talent acquisition people. Now, whether that plays out or not in really hiring to spec is another thing. This year, it's actually been, we have to build from within and we'll have to get more sophisticated around the talent science. So I think the fact that it's hard to find the skills we need is one thing. I think the second challenge that's coming in is market demand is dictating that we need to do more with less. And therefore, we've got to be a lot more smarter about our talent systems. And I think skills-powered organizations really do have that talent science that allows them to be a lot more smarter. And we hear the pain point. Let me think I'm going to get this right because the study's not quite out yet. But I think one in two executives this year said talent is the reason why they're not going to be able to deliver on their customer demand. And very few said, we don't have the ability to pivot up and down if demand changes. And Ilya was talking before about that whiplash. You know, sometimes we've got high demand, sometimes we've got low demand. There's that mismatch with supply. And they also aren't able to move talent from one part of the business to another part of the business. One of the things that I think we all learned through the pandemic is that people are very good at pivoting. People are very good at being able to apply their skills in ways they've never applied them to before, to problems they've never tackled. We saw just huge innovation, you know, perfume businesses pivoting into creating sanitizers. There was many examples. And I think that really did accelerate our move towards these more sort of agile talent models. And as I said, that crisis, I mean, we feel it all the time. I'm here in the UK at the moment, and we've got lots of strikes with doctors. And that's having a huge impact because we also don't have enough nurses to meet demand. So because we don't have nurses to meet demand, we need to think differently about how we match the skills that different nurses have with the different demands that there are so that we can just be a lot more creative in doing that. AI can sometimes be part of that. Our stats show that about 34 to 36% of all jobs are repetitive. So yes, that process augmentation and now cognitive augmentation. But it also means that we can start to step back and say, okay, if we rip the bandage out of the way we've always done it before, if we know the skills that our people have, if we know the skills we need for tomorrow, how can we better flow those people to those opportunities? And how can we even think more creatively about redesigning jobs so people can build the skills for the next job in the jobs of today? And so I do think that has really accelerated this year. And alongside it, we've seen much more interest in incentivizing skill development and also adding a pay for skills component into compensation this year, which I think is really exciting. And we've got some great examples of companies that I think are making a difference there. If I think about the ones in the book that have very kindly allowed us to sort of share theirs, they probably cluster in three areas along those lines. There's strong advocates talking about we've got to get the culture right first. So Novartis talks about before you bring in a talent marketplace, which can allow you to identify skills and move people around skills, and which is essentially democratizing opportunity, first democratize learning. So they spent time before they even introduced it, encouraging learning, focusing on what they call an unbossed culture, and actually redesigning work for well-being and learning. Then they introduced their talent marketplace. And I think that really made a big difference to them. The second one, and I think it's very relevant for the climate that we're entering in 2024, is create that business case. If we're trying to change our HR and talent models without really the backing of our executives and board, it's going to be uphill. And we all know that having old ways of working and new ways of working alongside each other is damn exhausting. And I think Tanaj Kapasharami from the Chief People Officer at Standard Chartered shows a really good example about how by moving from retrenching and then hiring talent versus reskilling and redeploying, they can make a huge saving. I think it's a 58K delta for every single person. And then the last one I mentioned there about skills, the one that pops into my head there is emphasis, because we've been chatting on this call about lateral moves for senior people. We've talked about bringing in non-traditional talent. And that's all great as values we hold, but doing that in practice, well, we often revert to the people we know who can do the job today. Emphasis has said when they think about skills, they think about skills across 3 time horizons. And they recommend leaders should only be hiring for time horizon 3, for those skills that are on the bleeding edge. All the others, they should be looking internally. And I think those very clear guardrails, I should say, really make a difference for managers to be able to translate those new ways of working and values into how they work different day to day. They also do some really clever things around paying for hot skills so that as clients pay more for them, they share that dividend with their people. There's some of the ones that I think are focusing on the culture, building the business case, and then reinforcing it with all the levers, not just those that sit in the talent side of the equation.
That's great, Kate. It's such an important topic. And I know we could have a whole podcast, and maybe we need to have a whole podcast just to talk about skills because it's such a hot topic. And there's a lot to really unpack when you think about everything. I love that emphasis example, by the way. I had not heard that. So it's a really good way to think about it. I do want to ask one final question to you both. Ilya, we'll start with you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I'll lead on one of the things that drives Mercer, and that is empathy and economics. Combination of the two is like there's a symbiotic relationship between the employer and the employee. Neither can succeed without the other. If we're too soft in terms of our approach to workforce and talent management and doesn't lead to business results, that's not a sustainable outcome for anyone. On the other hand, if we're too focused on the economics and forget about the people agenda or make it second, we've all seen what the challenge becomes when the labor market is hot. I think that balance is going to drive the future of HR for the next 5 to 10 years.
Brilliant. Kate?
You said one word. So if I had to have one word, I'd probably say inspiring. For me, I hope we do radically transform the world of work so that my kids are exhilarated to join it, be part of it, contribute to it, maybe even go into HR.
I love it. The employee-employer relationship, that empathy versus economics, inspiring. Really great. Thank you both for being on the podcast. The book is Work Different, 10 Truths for Winning the People Age. I hope everyone goes and picks it up. Great conversation. I think we learned a lot today. Thank you both.
Thank you, JP. Great to be here. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Kate and Ilya for sharing their research insights into the people age and the future of work. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us grow the podcast and helps with our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with a very special episode in partnership with the Institute for Corporate Productivity, also known as I4CP, where I had the opportunity to attend their annual Next Practices Now conference in Scottsdale, Arizona. Over 3 days, 500 HR leaders came together to network and hear over 25 different presentations and keynotes by thought leaders and world-class HR practitioners. It was a world-class event, and you could really feel the sense of community with all attendees. I was fortunate enough to be able to sit down and interview 7 of those amazing speakers. And as you can imagine, generative AI was a hot, hot topic. And we went deep on AI in several different angles, including why HR needs to lead on AI, its role in learning and development, the watchouts for creepy analytics in AI, and much, much more. If you missed this year's conference or you're not a member of I4CP, this is an episode you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.